IFPRI Policy Seminar, Food Security and Development in the Arab World, in Transition, held on Wednesday, November 7th in Washington, D.C. Speaker, Carolyn Freund from the World Bank.
I want to begin with a few words about the situation before the Arab Spring, and then move into some current developments, and then look forward a little bit. And I'm really going to focus on the big picture, as I think the other panelists know much more about food security than I do. So if we look back, one thing we see before the Arab Spring is we see a world of a region of slow but stable growth. So while China was growing at 10% and had unemployment below 5%, what we saw in the Middle East and North Africa region was the opposite picture. Growth around 5% and unemployment above 10%. So there was already some economic problems that were clearly evident. And this was shown in a really bloated government sector in many countries, which steal resources from the private sector. On average, the government sector in the MENA countries was above 25% of employment, while in countries such as Turkey or Indonesia, you see rates more like 10 to 15%. So you had a government sector, and these were the jobs people wanted. They paid higher wages. They were considered the good jobs that educated people especially were queuing for. There was also an issue of a skills mismatch, where you had the odd reality that people said there aren't jobs they want and they couldn't get jobs. But while there was such high unemployment and people were saying this, firms were saying they couldn't find the talented youth they needed for their firms to grow successfully. So there was some kind of mismatch with the skills being developed and what the private sector required. There were also these high fuel subsidies. There are high food subsidies as well, and in some sense that's more related to this conference. But I don't think the food subsidies are nearly as pernicious as the fuel subsidies, because the fuel subsidies tend to be regressive. So they're not serving the poor, they're serving the rich who have bigger houses and bigger cars and these kinds of things. In addition, they're pulling resources precisely into the wrong sectors. They're pulling resources into the energy-intensive and capital-intensive sectors that don't employ workers. So they're almost like a tax. You have taxed labor and subsidized fuel. What do you think you're going to use more of? And of course, they're costly to the fisc. So now we see these huge budget deficits as the price of oil goes up. So this was another problem that was distorting the economy. And there was a poor business climate, just a generally kind of crony capitalism going on. But that isn't enough to explain the slow growth, because we've seen that in Indonesia and other fast-growing Asian economies as well, this kind of crony capitalism, but with growth. So I think it was the crony capitalism and the inward-lookingness along with these other distortions that created corruption, high unemployment, and many of these kind of poor economic outcomes. In some of the countries, there was also evidence of real overvaluation. And in a world where countries are competing so intensely for markets, overvaluation is just a non-starter, because you can't be competitive against China if your currency isn't properly priced. So unfortunately, while the economic transition, or I should say political transition going on in many of the countries, it has very hopeful and positive political outcomes. In the short run, there's temporary economic challenges that are really quite severe. So last year, we saw a decline in growth in Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, and Yemen, quite significant, moving into the negative territory. So while starting from this point of sort of slow but stable growth and high unemployment, they've actually now gone into a situation where things are much worse, and we've seen an increase in unemployment, for example, in Tunisia from about 14% to nearly 20% just in the last year. So things are really quite difficult in this part of the world. And the current economic conditions in the rest of the world haven't been particularly helpful. So with Europe slowing down, which is a huge market for Morocco and Tunisia, 70 to 80% of their exports go to the European Union. Tourists, of course, come from there. So the timing makes things that much more difficult right now. And high oil prices, of course, have also been difficult to finance. So we're in a situation where there's a lot of hope, but economic conditions are quite difficult. So what we see now is in the press and what's going on as new governments are formed is it's still much more about politics than economics. So we haven't quite gotten to the economic awakening that we would need to follow the political awakening. And there hasn't been that much change so far. Doesn't mean it isn't coming, but we haven't seen a real shift in many of the policies. In the spring of 2011, for example, we saw an increase in subsidies in many countries, and then also in government sector employment, either in the forms of wages, regularizing temporary workers, these kinds of policies that are really part of the social compact of the past. More government sector workers, more subsidies, when really we need to move to a different kind of situation. At the same time, of course, governments need to manage expectations. They need some quick wins to keep things positive and develop a kind of confidence that things are going in the right direction. And I think there have been some important steps in this direction. So, for example, opening of information in Tunisia, we've seen the Information Act. Many more countries are interested in improving competition, in service delivery, in improving education, in using SMEs, which while they're not going to be the sort of silver bullet for job creation, they can help to build confidence, especially now. And of course, the standard of labor-intensive public works, which is a great way to employ people in the short run temporarily when things are difficult. But we also cannot forget the long-run reforms while we are trying to help the short run stabilize and move forward. And the reason these types of reforms, I mean, there's so many reasons fuel subsidies are bad, and government officials are well aware of this, but reform is very difficult. There's a short-run cost, sort of a J-curve of reform. There's a short-run cost when you try to do reforms, and it's only in the long run that you get the gains. So, for example, if resources are already in the energy-intensive sectors, in the short run, when you change energy costs, those sectors will be hurt and there'll be a decline, but it'll only be in the medium to long run where other sectors can develop. And this is why, I mean, we see it in every country in the world, reform is very difficult. So the biggest challenge is just meeting these expectations. And in the short run, I think this can partly be done through the political types of measures of information, campaigns against corruptions, things that'll make people feel confident the government is moving forward. It's also extremely important to show this kind of clear path because the uncertainty has moved into a situation where investors aren't investing. So we did a recent survey, MIGA and the EIU, of corporate investors in the region, and over 60% are withdrawing or sitting on the sidelines because it's just too uncertain. So it's very, very important to remove this type of uncertainty. The last thing I really want to talk about, I had one more topic, but I think I'm running out of time. or actually I had two more topics, but I'm going to skip one and move to, in terms of the knowledge gaps and moving forward, what we especially in the kind of knowledge building community can do. And the first point I want to make is, and I'll just make it, data, and data again. That what I noticed moving to really focus on this region after being at the bank and working in many areas is the lack of really rigorous data to inform policy and have evidence-based policy. So we need better distribution and openness of household surveys so that we know where the pockets of poverty are, and then can properly do social safety nets. We need to understand why it is that firms aren't growing. We've started, I mean, this the changes going on have helped. We're accessing more data than ever before. We have access now to firm census in Tunisia, and one of my people is over there now mining through this data and discovered that who was creating the jobs in Tunisia? It was mainly self-employment. But this, of course, over the last 10 years, the biggest creator was just people starting to work only for themselves and not hiring anybody. This isn't a stable way for an economy to grow. It explains, it helps us to understand what's wrong and how we can get the big firms that a small change in will really create employment to grow, and some young, new, dynamic firms, why aren't they taking off? There's also areas of political economy and governance where I think more research is needed and understanding. Areas on openness and transparency, and we really need a better understanding of the political economy in the region to be able to do reforms more easily, or to understand how external actors can help in this situation. There's a recent book, which I'm sure many of you have seen, by Daron Acemoglu and Jim Robinson, Why Nations Fail. And their argument is institutions and politics, basically. And the point is that if you have a situation where a government is more of a rentier state in their framework, then the government's only going to want to do projects that are more tied to their interests. So in this kind of a situation, when we do any kind of work from the outside, we have to think, whose interests are involved here? How is it affected? And if it's moving in the right direction, then it's something to do. If not, it's much better to work in the more apolitical areas. And that's where I think especially food security, poverty reduction, education, these are the areas where we can do more about inclusion and more to really help the poor than if we can't get into the other areas. Right now, in this period of transition, I think there's tremendous opportunity to get into all areas and hopefully to shift things to a longer run equilibrium, because there is so much potential in the Middle East and North Africa. If these people could come to work, GDP could be so much higher. That it's just a great resource, and we would like to see this excess labor not be excess labor, but be employed labor. So with that, why don't I stop, and we can come back to any of these issues and the questions, and I'll move on to the next speaker. Thank you.